Good morning. I want to talk to you this morning about vehicle repair. That might be a little bit strange sounding. Well, I've thought about this a lot lately because I've had to do a lot of vehicle repair in the not too distant past, all on my Jeep, that ugly blue thing that you've all seen me driving around for like 5 years now. I had to go through and completely revamp the suspension, do some drivetrain work, exhaust. I had to deal with some air conditioning problems, several other things, but those were the big ones. I'm nothing like a mechanic, very far from it, but I like to muddle through and I like to learn how the vehicle works and how the different systems integrate with each other. I like to figure it out for myself. And I like to avoid spending money, which I'm sure you all can sympathize with. And as I've gone through these various repairs not too long ago, I've kind of realized that I've hit upon a pattern, a system, for a process for how the repair goes. And I think it goes something like this. The first thing is to discover that there is a problem. That seems obvious enough. If you don't know there's a problem, then you're not going to try to fix it, are you? Well, after you've discovered it, then it's not as simple as what you have noticed. You usually have to examine until you can find the underlying cause of that problem. Once you know what that underlying cause is, you can replace the part that has failed, or sometimes you can repair the part that has failed, or whatever. And once you have done that, there's a step that often gets missed, but you ought to test it. To make sure that you have found the right thing, to make sure that the repair has worked. If it passes the test, then you get back on the road and you keep driving along. Let me go through a recent example. I think the most recent major, not really major, but significant repair that I had to do on my Jeep. Take you through this pattern. My air conditioning went out during the heat wave in August. So that was fun. And even if I were otherwise inclined to just say, big deal, who needs air conditioning anyway, at that time of this year in particular, that was not going to fly. It had to be fixed. It was very obvious that there was a problem, so discovery was not an issue. That was taken care of immediately on the first day that I tried to drive it when it was 107 degrees. But there are multiple possible causes behind that particular failure. Just to give you a few examples, it might be that there's that the clutch for the compressor is worn out or it's just failed completely. It could be that there's a short somewhere in the electrical system, whether it's the compressor field or coil or elsewhere. It could be that the compressor itself has just failed. It could be that there's a major refrigerant leak, and so the system won't work because it knows that it doesn't have the right pressures. It might be that there's a pressure sensor that has failed. It could be that there's an electrical relay that has gone out. It could be a problem somewhere in the control circuitry, and those are really difficult to pin down, especially for someone like me who's not very electrically minded. And the list goes on and on and on and on. And even if you don't have any idea what any of those words meant, I hope that serves to illustrate that there were a multitude of possible reasons behind this problem. And so I had to examine. I had to look at one thing and then another and test this thing and then that thing and narrow it down until I could figure out what was the real problem. So I tested the refrigerant pressure, and that was fine. I said, okay, well, that's not the issue. I was able to determine that the compressor clutch would never engage, no matter what happened. That gave me some useful information. I was able to determine that the control circuitry, that everything had voltage where it should have voltage and when it should have voltage, and it didn't have voltage when it shouldn't and where it shouldn't. So that's all good, except for one thing. I was able to determine that it wasn't sending power to the compressor. Okay, well, that seems to be important. So I thought about that, and I did a little bit of research, and it pointed me in the direction of maybe one of the pressure sensors has failed. So I looked at one of the pressure sensors, and I installed the jump wire, and lo and behold, now the clutch engages. Now it works. Now I know that sensor is the problem. that sensor is not working. Well, that meant that instead of spending tens or even hundreds of dollars on parts and labor to get something major replaced, all it required in this instance was an $8 sensor, and there was much rejoicing. I was able to go and buy this sensor, install it in the parking lot of the parts shop. I was then able to go to the next step and test the repair in the auto parts store parking lot, and everything worked. Everything's fine. So the problem is fixed, and I got back on the road with the air conditioning blasting as cold as it would go. It worked well. The repair was finished, and I didn't have to worry about it after that. So that's the repair process for automobiles, or at least the way that I have thought of it. And that might be helpful to you as you're going about your daily life, but what I want to do really this morning is to compare it to a spiritual repair process. We looked at an automobile, but what about repairing your soul? Okay, if there's a problem with your soul, if there's something that needs to be fixed, you kind of have to start in the same place. You have to know that there is a problem before you can fix it. You have to recognize, you have to discover that there is a problem. Now, how are you going to do that? Usually, you have to look. Turn with me to 1 Corinthians 11. We're just going to read verse 28. Paul says, let a person examine himself then, and so eat of the bread and drink of the cup. Examine yourself, is what Paul says. Now, of course, this is in the context of sharing the Lord's Supper in a particular instance and in the memorial that we observe each week. But that idea of examining oneself, what are you looking for? You're looking for a problem. You're looking for something that needs to be corrected, because you don't want to be sharing this memorial in an unworthy manner. And if there's a problem, then you want to correct it before you presume to share this memorial. So examine yourself, he says. He says something similar in Galatians chapter 6. Turn with me there, please. Galatians chapter 6, verse 4. But let each one test his own work, and then his reason to boast will be in himself alone and not in his neighbor. Okay, so here he's, again, it's part of a different context, and he's got more to talk about than just test your own work. But thinking about that notion, test your work, you don't want to just assume that everything is fine. If you do that, then you're likely to be proven wrong in the end. So examine it, test it, search for problems. Now, if you want to compare this to the automobile repair process, then this might be, you might think of this as something similar to the once-over that you give your car at the gas station while you're waiting for the tank to fill up. You know, you give it, is anything obviously wrong? Is anything obviously falling apart? Is one of my tires completely flat? A little once-over. Or maybe the weekly oil check that we all do, right? We have a hard time even making ourselves do that with our cars. We need to be a lot more proactive about a weekly oil check for our souls, don't we? Don't leave that alone. Make sure that you're examining yourself. Make sure that you are testing your work, actively looking for problems that need to be fixed in your life and in your soul. Now, sometimes your car will help you out. Sometimes a trouble code gets tripped, and it'll send a little warning light somewhere on your dashboard. It'll say, check engine soon, something like that. Modern cars have a whole bunch of sensors all over the place. And not all of them, but for most of what these sensors are doing, they're creating a voltage based on a particular thing that's happening in the car at this moment. And then they're sending that voltage to the car's computer, and the car's computer knows what the voltage should be and knows the range in which that voltage should fall, and it's saying, okay, here's what it should be. Now, what is the actual reading? Are they the same? Does the actual reading fall within the expected parameters? If it doesn't, that's an indication to the car something is wrong. and it'll trip a trouble code. And as I said, often it'll put a light on your dash, and that's how you find out, ah, I've got a problem. But in this analogy, you're not the driver, you're the car. Okay, the car has to do that actively. For us, it's a piece of cake. We just ignore it, and then if a light comes up, we go, oh, now I know. But the car has to actively compare those values constantly. If you want to be able to find problems proactively in your life before they get out of control, then you need to be constantly comparing. Now, you don't have a bunch of voltage sensors that are saying, well, it should be roughly 3.2 volts. So how are we going to do this? If you're still in Galatians, back in chapter 5, there's plenty of places that we could go for a list like this, but this is one of the best ones. Galatians chapter 5, let's read verses 22 and 23. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such things there is no law. Those are the expected values. If everything's fine in your soul, if everything's cool, that's what you ought to be producing. That's the fruit that ought to come. Now compare that to what you're actually producing. Are they the same thing? Is what you're actually producing, does that fall within the range of those expected parameters? If it does, great. If it doesn't, now you know. Something needs to be addressed. As long as we're talking about fruit, turn to Matthew chapter 7. Matthew chapter 7, let's read verses 15 through 20. Jesus says, "Beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly are ravenous wolves. You will recognize them by their fruits. Are grapes gathered from thorn bushes or figs from thistles? So every healthy tree bears good fruit, but the diseased tree bears bad fruit. A healthy tree cannot bear bad fruit, nor can a diseased tree bear good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. Thus you will recognize them by their fruits." Now Jesus is telling you how you can recognize other people and whatever problems they might be producing or what they might have themselves. But you can apply that to yourself as well. If you're a good tree, you ought to be producing good fruit. That seems logical. If you're a bad tree, then you'll produce bad fruit. So if what you're seeing is bad fruit, now you know there's something that needs to be addressed in the tree. There's something that you need to deal with. And if you will examine and proactively look for these things, then you're likely to find them before they spiral out of control. Now, when you're driving your car and there's a problem, you don't always have to look actively. You don't always have to proactively examine and try to find problems before you even know they exist. Sometimes there are obvious warning signs, aren't there? So if there's smoke billowing out of the engine compartment, that's a pretty good sign something is wrong. Odd sounds, things that just don't quite sound right. You go, I don't think it did that before. Even if you don't know exactly why it's making that sound, it stands out to you as something that is probably wrong. Sometimes it's not something that you can see or hear, but it can be even something you can smell. You might smell something that is combusting, and there's no smoke that you can see. You don't hear anything going wrong, but it shouldn't smell like that. That's an indicator, isn't it? It's an obvious warning sign. Now, and sometimes it's not one of those senses. It's not something you can see. It's not something you can hear. It's not something you can smell. But it's something that you can feel. You might have an engine misfire or a bad motor mount or any number of things. Even your fuel mixture could be off for crying out loud. And it might cause the engine to just shudder a little bit. And even if you aren't looking at it, can't see it, you'll feel it. And you know, something is not quite right. Sometimes we have indications like that in our own lives too. Obvious warning signs that you'd have to be completely oblivious in order to miss. And sometimes it's that little shudder that you can't quite explain, but you can't quite shake. And it might give you the conclusion that something is not quite right in your soul. When that kind of thing happens, it bears examination, doesn't it? Because usually the indicator that you see is not itself the cause. For example, I think it was Brent who brought up in class this morning in 1 John, especially in chapter 4. John goes into quite a bit of detail in that letter, demonstrating and explaining that these people are, they're at least seeing others who have a problem with a failure to love their brothers. He harps on that throughout 5 chapters. He comes back to it over and over and over and over again. And that's a problem. That's the outward manifestation. That's the obvious visible sign. But John doesn't say that's the cause. He doesn't say you don't love your brothers, and so what you really need to do is to start loving your brothers. He's saying, if you were of God, then you would love your brothers. And the fact that you don't love your brothers is an indicator that there's something wrong, deeper than that. And what he traces it down to in his particular circumstances is actually a theological error. It's not to say this is the only thing that can cause that. Just like with my air conditioning problem, there could have been plenty of different things that caused that manifest problem. But he said in chapter 4 that to deny that Jesus came in the flesh leads to the problem of not loving your brother. That was the underlying cause, that they didn't understand Jesus. They were denying who he really was. That was the cause. What they noticed was a failure to love their brothers, but that was only the outward manifestation of it. Now, it's usually not as strange a connection as that, as we are examining our souls. Turn to James chapter 4. Sometimes the relationships are fairly obvious and logical, and they don't really cause a whole lot of surprise for us. James chapter 4, let's read verses 1 through 3. What causes quarrels and what causes fights among you? Is it not this, that your passions are at war within you? You desire and do not have, so you murder. You covet and cannot obtain, so you fight and quarrel. You do not have because you do not ask. You ask and do not receive because you ask wrongly to spend it on your passions. Well, that shouldn't be too surprising. If there's an inward conflict that there shouldn't be, then it's not that much of a surprise that it would spill over into an outward conflict that shouldn't exist. And that's what James says is likely to happen here and is happening among the people to whom he's addressing his letter. Your passions are at war within you, and that is the cause of the quarrels and fights that you have with each other. Sometimes the Bible gives us clear indicators like that to say, if this is your problem, this is probably the cause. Work on that. If you're having trouble getting along with your brothers, then maybe you ought to consider looking at your own passions within you, because that's probably the cause of the outward problem. Sometimes the Bible gives us those clear indicators, but often we have to muddle through. We have to look at one thing and then another and narrow it down and rule things out. One of the major causes of these kinds of problems is found in Matthew chapter 22. I should preface this because we're only going to read one verse, but Jesus is he's being addressed by Sadducees. And remember, the Sadducees were the political and also religious sect of the Jews that, among other things, denied that there was a resurrection of any kind. So they have that theological misunderstanding or error, their conclusion about there being no resurrection, and then they ask Jesus a convoluted question, and his response to them in Matthew chapter 22, verse 29, Jesus answered them, "You are wrong, because you know neither the Scriptures nor the power of God." Okay? So before, remember when we talked about the First John and the problem there, a failure to understand and acknowledge Christ, God in the flesh, led to a behavioral problem of these people not loving their brothers. Well, now Jesus is indicating that the Sadducees have it the reverse way. There's a behavioral problem that they're not, they don't know the scriptures. They're not reading and studying the scriptures. And that has led to a theological error for them, that they have denied the resurrection because they don't know the scriptures or the power of God. It's kind of a cyclic thing sometimes between the theology and the behaviors. And a failure to know the scriptures is only going to lead us to problems in our souls that need to be repaired. Okay, well, once you've found whatever that root cause is, you're ready to make the repair, just like with your car. Often, it's pretty simple. Like, you know, when I had to fix my air conditioning and I just had to replace an $8 sensor. Often, the problem is that you're sinning. Okay, so cut that out. That's pretty simple, isn't it? If you're mistaken, become unmistaken. If you're failing to meet an obligation and that's the problem, well, start meeting that obligation. I said it was simple. I didn't say it was easy. Let me give you another example from a relatively recent repair on my Jeep. I had an oxygen sensor go out on the exhaust system. Just a sensor. It was pretty obvious what was the problem. Didn't take me very long to narrow that down. All I had to do was buy a new sensor. It's not terribly expensive. I had to, I believe, unplug one electrical connector, unscrew the sensor, screw the new one in, and plug in the electrical connector. That was the extent of the repair. It took me about 2 hours. I was drenched in sweat. It was very painful. My hand was rather bloody at the end of it. It was very simple. It was not easy in any way, shape, or form to get my hand into the right place and unplug that connector. That was one of the most difficult repairs that I've ever done, considering the size of it. That's the way rooting out sin can be. It's very simple, but it's going to be painful. It might be sweaty, bloody, frustrating. But you need to power through that if you intend to make the repair. Another thing that's worth mentioning, I've got up here on the list for repairing your car, replace or repair. Replace. I think that also fits over in our analogy with your soul. If you find something that's defective in your life or in your soul, you don't just want to remove that thing necessarily. Compare it to this. If you're driving down the interstate and you hear and feel the womp, 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 and you realize, oh, I've got a flat tire. Is the proper way to handle that to, you know, you pull over and you get out and you jack up the car and you take off that tire and wheel and toss it in the ditch and then hop back in and drive away? If you just remove the defective part, it's not going to be very good repair. You've got to replace it with one that does work if you want to actually be in good shape. Matthew chapter 12, Jesus has something to say about this that's very similar. Matthew chapter 12, verses 43 through 47. When the unclean spirit has gone out of a person, it passes through waterless places seeking rest but finds none. Then it says, I will return to my house from which I came. And when it comes, it finds the house empty, swept, and put in order. Then it goes and brings with it seven other spirits more evil than itself, and they enter and dwell there. And the last state of that person is worse than the first. So also will it be with this evil generation. If you get rid of the bad, if you get rid of what's defective, but you don't replace it with something good, you're kind of leaving the door open to more problems, often worse problems. So make sure you don't just remove, replace. Fill the void with something better, with something good. I mentioned with the automobile that after you have made the repair, often people skip the next step. But just like it's important for your car, it's even more important for your soul. Test. Because sometimes the problem is not what you thought it was. I'll give you another example from my own travails in repairing my Jeep. I had an issue, and this has been a few years ago now, where the engine was overheating regular basis. And there's, again, a handful of things that can cause that. One of them is if you've got a thermostat that is stuck closed. Okay, so you put a new thermostat in. And I did that. But that wasn't actually the cause of the problem. So it didn't fix it. If I'd put in that new thermostat and then just hopped back on the highway and drove around without a care in the world and not even paid attention to the temperature gauge, where would I have ended up? I had to test and make sure that I had the right diagnosis and the right prescription. Because replacing the wrong part doesn't help anything. Changing a behavior that's not actually related, even if you thought it was, it's not going to help your problem. So you have to test. Turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 13. We'll read verses 5 through 7. Examine yourselves to see whether you are in the faith. Test yourselves. Or do you not realize this about yourselves, that Jesus Christ is in you, unless indeed you fail to meet the test? I hope that you will find out that we have not failed the test, but we pray to God that you may not do wrong, not that we may appear to have met the test, but that you may do what is right, though we may seem to have failed. Now, you might notice that that actually has kind of a lot in common with the very start where we talked about discovering a problem and having to examine and test and look for problems actively. And yeah, it's pretty similar. It's the same deal. You want to test your repair just like you were looking for problems at the beginning. There's a constant vigilance that's required. That's helpful with your car. It's essential for your soul. Turn to 1 Peter chapter 4. 1 Peter chapter 4, and we will read verse 12. Beloved, do not be surprised at the fiery trial when it comes upon you to test you, as though something strange were happening to you. We all know this. Tests and trials are going to come. So wouldn't you rather test it on your own terms first than wait to see what Satan throws at you? If you think you've fixed your behavior, if you think you've fixed your error, if you've replaced the defective part, so to speak, give it a test. Because whatever test you can cook up is probably not going to be as difficult to pass as whatever test Satan can cook up. And he will send a test your way. So test it on your own terms first, so that you're more ready to meet that test. Well, how do you do this? Okay, let me give you an example. 1 Corinthians chapter 5. The New Testament's getting a workout this morning. 1 Corinthians chapter 5. Let's read verses 9 and 10. I wrote to you in my letter not to associate with sexually immoral people. Not at all meaning the sexually immoral of the world or the greedy and swindlers or idolaters, since then you would need to go out of the world. Okay. Forever cutting off bad influences seems like it's a good idea. And historically, it has seemed like a good idea to a whole lot of people. There was a movement, but a strange tendency within people calling themselves Christians since about the 3rd, 4th century AD called monasticism. And every once in a while, you'll still see someone who is dressed in the robes of a monk. Or you'll run across a nun. The idea behind that is to separate oneself, to get completely away from the world, to completely avoid temptation and corruption and bad and evil influences. That's where it starts. Now, it led in a lot of ways that were actually very good and very helpful, and we should have some gratitude toward a lot of these people who, for example, were a big part of copying and recopying and re-recopying the scriptures so that we could have them. They accomplished a lot of great things, and we should be very grateful to them. But the idea of separating oneself from the world is not what God has in mind. Paul says that here to the Corinthians. Look, when I told you not to associate with people who are sexually immoral, I didn't mean those of the world. You would have to leave the world completely in order to avoid that, and that's not what we are called to do. He was talking about something that was within the church, something that was more disciplinary. God doesn't want a church of hermits. The goal is to be able to operate as you should be able to operate in the presence of bad influences. So test yourself out. Don't be careless, don't be reckless, but test yourself out. Make sure that you can handle the sort of things that God is going to expect you one day to handle. And then finally, if you've gone through all of this and you've done all the tests and you said, okay, I passed the test with flying colors, everything's good. Well, you don't just sit in the garage. You get back on the road. You get trucking. You make your way through life, fulfilling the expectations that God has of you. Let's go back to Matthew chapter 7 again. Just before Jesus used the tree and fruit metaphor, which we found so useful, he said in verses 13 and 14, "Enter by the narrow gate, for the gate is wide and the way is easy that leads to destruction, and those who enter by it are many. For the gate is narrow and the way is hard that leads to life, and those who find it are few." Jesus is using the metaphor of traveling down a road to get to eternal life. We're using that same metaphor, aren't we? Once you've made the repair, once you're in good shape, get back on the road. Make sure it's the right road. And then keep traveling down it. Well, that's the spiritual repair process. What happens if you don't make the repair? Think about the car again for a moment. If you don't repair your car in a timely fashion, well, I have some experience with this. It was a car that I drove around for several years that I neglected terribly. And the problem usually gets worse, often to ludicrous point. Often the problem causes additional problems. And what often happens is it'll create a situation in which it's really just not feasible to fix all of the issues anymore because there's so many and they're so compounded. It can cause a great inconvenience. That car that I neglected that I mentioned, for example, it had an issue where the window regulator interfaced with the window itself through a really junky piece of injection molded plastic that put all of the load on a tiny little webbing that snapped repeatedly. And I replaced that regulator, I think twice, and it snapped a third time. And at that point, I said, I've had enough. It was a lot cheaper than buying a new regulator was to go to the hardware store and buy a dowel and cut that to the proper length, rip off the door panel, and wedge that dowel in underneath the window so that it would stay up. Okay, well, I mean, from the outside, it looked okay, but from the inside, I lost all the insulation from the door panel. I had to, instead of a handle, I had a little bent wire that I had to yank in order to get out of the car. There were several times where I pulled up to a drive-thru and then went, it was very inconvenient because I wasn't dealing with the actual problem. I was just putting a Band-Aid on it. Leaving the problems unsolved devalues the car. Eventually, it can become completely useless. It can become worse than valueless. It can become a liability, a burden. Eventually, a heap of trash. That same car, that Grand Am that I so neglected, I owned it for 5 years. And when I traded it in, I was lucky to get back 10% of the initial investment. But those are not the worst of the problems that you might face. It can get worse. What's the worst is when it, well, maybe not even, we're not even quite to the worst yet. A breakdown. Not just an inconvenience, not, oh, a light popped up, not, oh, my window won't stay shut, but you're stranded on the side of the road. I had that happen with my Grand Am. I had an anti-lock brake sensor that, again, repeatedly, there seemed to be a lot of chronic problems with that car, repeatedly went out, and after I'd replaced it once or twice already for $500 or so, I said, okay, I'll just do without ABS. Which seemed like a great idea until I was driving down a snowy, icy road and everybody in front of me slammed on the brakes and I go, well, I don't really have any options at this point. And it ended up in a snowdrift. That's not a good place to be. I can't guarantee that we would have stayed out of that snowdrift if the anti-lock brakes had worked, but we would have had a much better chance, wouldn't we? Because I didn't address the problem, we ended up stuck in a blizzard. Don't want to do that with your soul. But even that's not the worst. I don't have experience with this one, fortunately, but I know someone who had an issue with a horribly corroded tie rod, and tie rods are pretty thick. So for it to corrode to this point requires quite a lot of abuse and neglect. And to basically just have nobody ever look at it and say, hey, you know, your tie rod's about to bust there. But I know someone who was driving around her car and her tie rod snapped. And that's if you don't know, it's a crucial steering component. And if that breaks, it's not just that you can't steer your car, it's that your car steers you. And this car steered her straight into a concrete pillar. And she was very lucky to be even alive after that. How many times have you seen something like that on the side of the road? Often because somebody neglected a problem until it failed catastrophically. If you don't repair your car, that's what you're looking at. If you don't repair your soul, then what happens? We started out, well, I say we, Stephen started out in John chapter 15. Let's turn there again. John chapter 15, let's reread verses 1 through 6. I am the true vine, and my Father is the vine dresser. Every branch in me that does not bear fruit, he takes away. And every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes that it may bear more fruit. Now, I realize we're mixing metaphors, but we've been doing that all morning. We talked about Jesus using the tree and fruit analogy. Now, we're back to it, okay? A tree that produces good fruit is like a car that's in good repair. A tree that produces bad fruit is like, well, one of these trash heaps, okay? Let's keep going. Verse 3. Already you are clean because of the word that I have spoken to you. Abide in me and I in you. As the branch cannot bear fruit by itself unless it abides in the vine, neither can you unless you abide in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. Whoever abides in me and I in him, he it is that bears much fruit. For apart from me, you can do nothing. That all sounds good. Verse 6, if anyone does not abide in me, he's thrown away like a branch and withers, and the branches are gathered, thrown into the fire, and burned. That's the end that awaits us if we don't keep our souls in good repair, if we don't stay in good standing with our Lord and Savior. Which is worse, that or to be thrown into the fire yourself for eternity? Just like with a car, when it rolls off the factory line, everything is pristine. It's perfect. It's as good as it's ever going to get. Well, that's how God made each one of us. That's how we were born. We weren't born sinful. We weren't born with a broken relationship with Him. We were born sinless. We were born innocent and pure. We were born pristine. And then we've all fallen into disrepair. We've all broken down to one degree or another. We all need to repair ourselves, to let God repair us from time to time. I encourage you, if you need repair, don't put it off. Don't tell yourself, that's never going to happen to me. I've got time. I can give it a few thousand more miles. Don't take that risk. Address the problem now.